Warning, the following podcast will contain subject matter that on the surface may appear tame and for everyone. We here at Orsini's Uncensored Mind can assure you that it will not be. You will hear adult language. We will have a complete disregard for your feelings and emotions, and we will have zero restraint on the opinions shared on this show. There will be no safe spaces available for anyone listening. So, if you're one of those individuals offended by literally everything, this is not the fucking show for you.
Well, now you've done it. Now he's really pissed.
Son of a bitch, gonna be a handful. Since I met you, I've done some hairy shit. But this is not gonna happen. I'm gonna be a grandfather. You alone are gonna have a baby. He ain't worth dying for, Riggs. He ain't worth it.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, if he gets away, we can track him down later on with a, well, you know, with a howitzer or something.
Yeah.
Your son-in-law's in there bleeding. We should get him and get the hell out of here. Anyway, it's raining.
Shit, it's raining.
I'm too old for this shit, too.
Guy's too damn good.
Well, yeah, he's damn good. I mean, how did he do that thing with the gun? How the hell did he do that? I mean, he took my gun apart with one deft move. How did he do that? Huh? How?
Yeah? Okay. Let's go ask him.
Welcome to Orsini's Uncensored Mind, and now your host, AJ Orsini.
How the hell is everybody out there? This is your boy, your main man, your Josh Solbo from another mother. This is your host of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. This is AJ Orsini. Lower that down. Get it out of my ear. How the hell is everybody out there? Again, this is your boy, AJ. We are here with yet another episode. I am bequeathing onto all of you yet another episode of Orsini's Uncensored Mind. And I have got to tell you, this is a pretty special episode for me. Pretty special. Now, we're getting ever so closer to the 100th. And I know that I said that this is probably going to be the week that I will have a little bit more information as to what we're doing with that. No, I don't. I have some ideas, and because they have not been confirmed, because I have sent some information out, they did not get confirmed in time for this episode, so one more week, and then we'll settle all this to figure out what we're going to do, because I just wanted to make it solid. I don't want to, what is that music in the background? Goddamn ads on fucking the phone, on the fucking phone. Turn that bullshit off, ad. I will not buy, what is that, wood puzzle. I don't want to buy wood puzzle. Poor man's Tetris. Anyway, I don't have the official word just yet. I have not received confirmation. Therefore, I will not confirm it. When I hear back, I'm probably going to post it on social media before it gets to this show anyway. That's how close we are to actually settling this this idea down. And how this is going to go down. Savvy? So, once I have that update, guys, you will have that update literally as soon as possible. So, you guys can be up to date and decide whether or not you want to be a part of this. I'm not giving you much time to decide. That's my bad. I've been busy. But I'm trying to get all things done and work all things out here. So, one other thing before we continue on. Last week, I had made this announcement at the end of the show that this was the week that I was going to spill the beans, that I was going to go ahead and give you guys this super well-thought-out idea and plan to go through the possibilities of a possible wrestling off-season for 2019. for the WWE. That was something that I promoted pretty heavily toward the end of the show there. And I was good to go. I promoted it because I was halfway done. I had since completed the notes, but I do not have my notes. My notes were written in a notebook. I know, old school. And it is currently at my job. So while I do remember most of the material, I would not be able to eloquently explain all of my thoughts as well as I did on paper. So I will wait. Maybe not even next week. We're gonna put a pin on that for now because I was kind of in the mood to do it now. But as we get closer to 100, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do that for as long a length of time as I wanted to. So that's my bad. I know I got a cell phone. I got all kinds of laptops. I have all kinds of electronics. But at my job, I can't use any of them freely. So pen and paper was the way to go. And unfortunately, I did not snapshot it or write it up. So we are here dealing with the consequences of that. So I apologize for that. But that does not mean that I did not come up with a show for here tonight. And we're going to get rocking and rolling in just a few minutes. Real quick, I have to do this at the beginning. I know that normally I wouldn't do it so soon. But I want to get it out in the open here because I want it to be heard in case people don't tune all the way into the end. I want to make sure everyone gets this information. I'm still working side by side with another company called tobeseen.com. Excuse me, tobeseen.com. They have all kinds of video options for you. As a matter of fact, I did it even better in this commercial ad that I put together. So go ahead and listen to this real quick, and we'll be back with the rest of this show. I got a lot of great shit coming at you guys. Hey guys, Orsini here, and I just want to take the time to thank our sponsor for the live WrestleMania Roundtable, tobeseen.com. That is the number 2, BESCENE.com. They are an entertainment and videography company, and I have given them big 2 thumbs up. I have used them in the past for my own pro wrestling company, and I'm glad to be working with them yet again with the podcast. Now, again, they're an entertainment and videography company. They do it all, baby. They storyboard, they film you, they edit, they publish all in one place. It's easy come, easy go. They even have the ability to shoot the baby in 4K. If you're a YouTuber or an internet sensation coming up, these are the people that you want to contact and work with. What's that? You're not a YouTuber? You're not trying to be all over the place? That's fine. You can still go to their website for entertainment purposes. They hold live trailer chats. They discuss movies and anything entertainment. Check it out again. The number 2, BESCENE.com. So it's real quick. I wanted to get that information out as quickly as I possibly could to do this episode, just in case you guys didn't get a chance to hear it. Toward the end, so lots to discuss here. Of course, the top of the hour, not the top of the hour. I'm ending this episode with actually something a whole lot of fun. I put together something that we're going to be discussing at the end here, and I'll get into all that. But there's the number one news story of the week. I mean, the one that dominated, folks. This is the one that was number one on the charts. As everyone already knows, Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman back in the WWE fold. Now, Paul Heyman, of course, already part of the fold to a degree with his role as the advocate for Brock Lesnar, the reigning and defending. You can still do all that because, as far as I'm concerned, that man will always be the Universal Champion, the greatest Universal Champion of all time. Had he stayed in 2004, he might have gone down as one of the greatest WWE Champions of all time. That's no longer a question to be had, but he is the greatest Universal Champion of all time. There's just no doubt about that at all. Until another man steps up and takes that lineage from him, that belongs to him. But Paul Heyman, being his advocate, does not come to an end. He will be his advocate moving forward. But now, Paul Heyman has been given the reins here, executive director of Monday Night Raw. I do not know the specifics on that. Very few people do know the actual specifics. What we do know is that being the executive director gives him, I don't want to say final say, because the final say actually still goes to Vince no matter what. But it does put him in quite the position to have a more hands-on approach with how this product is going to look going forward. And if, And I'm glad this happened because this was announced Thursday, the day after I released last week's episode. So I'm actually glad I got a chance to see Monday Night Raw before I got a chance to talk about the move, because my first reaction when I heard about the news, not positive. Not positive, because I don't think it makes a dent. I don't think that it matters, because at the end of the day, you know, Vince still makes the final decisions on this. So I just don't see much of a change possible, let alone creatively outputted. Can Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff sit down and come up with creative television? Sure they can. They did it for forever. You know, everyone talks about the Monday Night War, and they forget that these two guys were basically heavy chess pieces in that game. So, yeah, I mean, on paper, sure, if we sat down and write some shit out, they'd probably come up with some creative shit. But the fact that it still comes through Vince is the part that kills me to the hire. It's one of the reasons I didn't really like it, because it doesn't really matter. I feel like the two of them would literally just be wasting their fucking time. I mean, what are you there for? You're just going to be writing like everyone. You're going to be a writer like everyone else. I'm pleasantly surprised at the way that Monday Night Raw went, because to be honest with you, I felt a lot of Paul Heyman presence, we'll say, as it relates to the way that program went, the way that it felt, the way that promos were done, the way the characters were portrayed, just everything about that program from top to bottom felt like definitely not ECW. We can leave that alone. ECW will never come back. Nothing will ever feel like that ever again. But if we can mimic some of that 2003, 2004 SmackDown stuff, not even four, excuse me, 2002, 2003 SmackDown stuff that Paul was writing back then when he had his SmackDown 6, we could expect quite a program. And that's the part that I'm looking forward to. If they give this guy the ball, if they give this guy the opportunity to really be creative and really jot some shit down, and hopefully, with all due respect to everybody else that's there putting in their efforts as far as writers and agents, hopefully get a firmer hand as to the presentation of the product, it's going to be great for everyone, including the talent. One of the first things I read online about one of Paul's wants or direction changes, he wants to get rid of authority figures. That's one of the first things he wants to do. God bless him, because if Vince McMahon gives you a job to change things around and the first thing you do is X him and his kids, that's ballsy. I will give him all the credit in the world. Those take big, gigantic brass balls for him to even contemplate that type of shit. But but that's the way that it goes, and it is a hell of an idea when you really think about it. That he just wants to go out there and he wants to put on the best product he can possibly put under the regime of Vince McMahon. How will that fare? We'll see. Thus far, not bad. 1 week will not dictate change. It needs to become a habit. But it wasn't bad. That was not a very bad show overall. I just finished watching SmackDown. Now I'm hearing now that Paul may have gotten started right away, but Bischoff has not. Whatever tonight's version of SmackDown was, that was not a Bischoff production, or so I'm hearing officially, that Bischoff was backstage, but was not used in the predominant role that people are assuming that he's going to be in moving forward. So, having said that, I'm going to go ahead and give this SmackDown a pass. I'm not going to shit on it. I'm not going to say anything positive about it. I've seen Raw and SmackDown enough with the basic skeleton crew to know what I'm going to get. I'm going to wait until I can officially hear that Bischoff is the one pulling the strings and making the changes, and then we'll judge the shows accordingly from there. So I wanted to just dabble a little bit in that, because that was big news. I think I mentioned this part, right? Yeah, okay, I mentioned this part. What are the products of Raw that screamed Paul Heyman is the Maria Kanellis promo, the one that everyone's talking about here. Maria Kanellis went in there and shot the promo of a lifetime, basically. Not a lot of women impressed with her promo, especially women who have had kids, so they don't find her promo about pushing an 8-pound shit out of her vagina that impressive, fortunately. But for me,
as a guy who has neither a vagina nor the ability to push a 8-pound human being out of it, I thought it was a damn good promo. A lot of passion, a lot of intensity. Mike sold it well. They did the whole cuck thing pretty good. But the biggest takeaway that I got from this promo, and fellas, if you're listening to this, I don't mean to insult you if you haven't advanced to this section of your life yet. But according to Maria Kanellis, you're not a real man if you can't knock up your woman. And I am happy to say that apparently I am a man's man. Because I took my wife and I knocked her right the fuck up. That's what I did. I knocked her up good. I got a good kid, too, out of it. But I knocked her up good. She took my seed. I laid with a woman and she took my seed. So according to Maria's definition, I am a man's man. And this is something that I already knew. This is obvious. This is one of those duh moments. You know, clearly I'm a man's man. But it was nice to be acknowledged, you know, to have the people say it on TV. You know, he's a man's man. I'm super proud of that, by the way. Super proud of that. So, according to those definitions, I am a man's man. And Mike, even though, are they promoting the idea that it's her second child? Or I was confused by that. Because they were selling it. I love the fact that Mike Kanellis says, how are you pregnant? And I think my wife was in the room. She was like, wait, what? How are you pregnant? Does he need to be told? Does the way that this works, that the birds and the bees have not, don't they already have a kid? Which I believe they do. I believe this is baby number two, which was, by the way, in case you haven't heard, the most beautiful heist. It was the heist of the century, by the way. All this talk from the Kanellises, I guess you could say, about them being unhappy the way they've been treated and the way that their return has worked out, and there was all this talk about waiting for their contracts to expire and all this stuff. And out of the blue, as it would seem, they re-signed huge deals to stay in the WWE, which shocked the shit out of everybody because they're pretty much saying, well, I thought you guys were unhappy and this and that and so forth. And people were just stunned by the idea that these guys could just sign these deals. And it wasn't even a week, maybe two, we get on TV and I'm pregnant. She's pregnant with baby number two. Does it make sense to you guys now? Why all of a sudden they just signed these contracts out of nowhere? You know, they did a lot of backtracking leading up to this announcement. But at the end of the day, boom, goes the dynamite. Now we know why it was so sudden. Now we know why they decided to stay in spite of the fact that they weren't really happy being there. Financial security, baby number two is coming. No one knew. And they didn't, neither did the WWE. They offered them these contracts only to find out after they signed that she was pregnant. Good job on your end. Good job. That's called good business. They locked themselves up in some long-term deals so that they can get paid down the line. And now she's going to go on maternity leave because she's preggers. So there goes that. Smart move by the Kanellises. Probably a brainchild of Maria's, I'm sure. Mike being the cook that he is. Beautiful move by Maria. Get that money, baby. Get that money. Absolutely, absolutely. I put a post out earlier. If you feel like I'm skimming through shit, it's because I got a lot to get to at the end. And I'm going to explain it right after I get through with these topics, okay? I'm going to once again dip my toe into the AEW pool. Now, I have to mention this now. I do know that Fyter Fest took place. I talked about it on the show here quite a bit leading up to the program. Try to get a little promotional material for you guys out there. Let you know what was happening in the matches and blah, 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 blah. I am sad to announce that while I have the files, I do have the show, I have not watched it yet. So, I am not able to discuss much about it. What I do know is Sean Spears, formerly known as Ty Dillinger, took a steel chair to Cody Rhodes' head, cut him deep, cut him open, and the internet shit a chicken. Unprotected chair shots, careless, reckless activity in the ring, blase, blase, blah. If you agree to do chair shots, this is the type of shit that comes with the territory. It's just what it is. Tony Khan said it best. That shit was an accident. We're not doing that kind of shit moving forward. We're not getting hardcore. We're not trying to cut each other up. The last pay-per-view they did, Double or Nothing, you know, Dustin is a bloody mess and Cody's a mess. And now we fast forward to Fyter Fest. Cody's bleeding again. So I guess Tony decided it was a good time to go ahead and put that out there, that this is not something that we're going to be doing full-time moving forward, which is probably for the best. You know, you're moving to TNT, you're moving to TV in general, trying to become a weekly episodic television show. Having a ton of blood on your fucking program probably isn't going to work itself out. You could ask, there were a lot of companies that did it a lot longer and a lot better than AEW that did not succeed on television with it. So it's not going to work. Not on a mainstream level and not all the time. You'll have your occasional street fight, your occasional no-holds-barred match for storyline purposes, but to just go out there and just have blood and guts, it just doesn't seem like it would be the best idea. And speaking of which, not just hardcore matches, but Tony Khan even went further in explaining intergender matches as well. It's not something they're interested in doing. And to that, you know, people have heard my feelings on that. And it's not that I dislike intergender wrestling. I think if you do it correctly and you tell a story with it, it makes absolutely sense. I told a story not too long ago of being at the Impact Wrestling taping. And they did this big deal with Sami Callihan and Tessa Blanchard, and they told this beautiful story, and they really got a chance to put Tessa over a little bit. I liked all that shit. This everyday attitude of going back and forth and competing evenly, women and men, and yada, yada, yada. No, I'm not a fan of that. And I would not book that. But that's, again, that's me. That's me. That's not everyone else. And apparently it's Tony Khan as well. Not a fan of the intergender matches. I'm sure he will renege on that. When you get the right storyline together, intergender makes sense. It makes sense to do. Athletically, it does not make sense to do. It never really has made sense to do. But you don't have to be a dick about it. You don't got to Eli Drake yourself. Okay? You got a guy of comparable size to a woman, and you go head-to-head in a physical contest. Okay, sure. You got a guy like, I don't know, Brian Cage or whatever to fight like Tessa Blanchard, which has happened before. And I'm sorry, I just don't buy into it. Not a fan. It doesn't make me a bad guy because I'm not a fan of watching women get the shit kicked out of them by 300-pound athletes. At least I don't think it does. But if it does me, then it does Tony Khan as well. If you're going to call me an asshole for it, then you got to call Tony Khan an asshole because it is not an interest of his either. Okay? So that's how that's going to go for AEW. I will talk more on the Fyter Fest stuff as soon as I get a chance to watch it, probably over the weekend. It's a long fucking show. AEW doesn't do anything small. They fight. They're so used to the Wrestle Kingdom bullshit. They fight forever in AEW. Plus, this is going to be a show sans Chris Jericho. So we'll see what they do here. I'm interested in the Moxley-Janela match. I heard it was pretty gruesome. I know I just sat here and said that I'm not big on hardcore matches either. I think it was just last week. But, again, same thing with the intergender. Done right, the right story, I can get into it. And I heard this was pretty interesting, pretty good. So I am very interested and forward into seeing this. One more quick thing before I get into the main event here. I'm only 23 minutes in. He's going to start the main event already. Well, in about 5 minutes, I will. Half of this episode is going towards a pretty fun project that I did. So, I know in the beginning of this show, when I started everything up, I don't know if you guys are noticing, but I've been divulging a lot into my earlier episodes to kind of do a full circle deal. We're about to hit 100 episodes, so I've been paying attention to some of my older shit. And I used to be a little bit more sports-oriented as opposed to just the wrestling stuff. And not that people opposed the sports stuff. They just weren't as into it as the wrestling stuff. The people who listen to me listen for the wrestling stuff, so that's fine. But there's one New York sports thing that I got to talk about because it's not about the sports. And I've been talking about this on social media for a minute, and I keep trying to tell people I'm not in this or I'm not discussing this solely based on the conversation of talking about sports. Okay, I'm talking about this on a bigger level. More importantly, New York City, where I'm from. Okay, New York City, if in case you haven't heard, okay, this is going to be some basketball conversation. All right, Kevin Durant, formerly of the Golden State Warriors, became a free agent and decided he was going to go to the Brooklyn Nets instead of the New York Knicks. And Kyrie Irving is going to go with him as well. to Brooklyn and not New York. Again, I'm not going to get into specifics because it's really this conversation I'm about to have is not about the basketball, to be honest with you. I'm just telling you this information for context, okay? For some oddball reason, this year, the year before that, every fucking year for forever, for as long as I can remember. As a matter of fact, the last time the Knicks were good were the 90s, so pretty much since the 90s, every year is the year where we buy that one guy who turns it all around, right? We're going to save cap space. We're going to tank games. We're going to save some cap space, and we're going to go out there, and we're going to get the best fucking players available, and then we're going to be in title contention. It's going to be great. Blah, 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 blah. We're going to save money for LeBron. He doesn't come. We're going to save money for this guy or that guy. And my wife brought up, well, didn't Carmelo come? Yeah, Carmelo came because his fucking wife made him. All right? If it wasn't for him being in love with the pussy, he wouldn't be here. And for the record, when he came, he wouldn't hear long. And for good reason, because it wasn't a good mix. He found out the hard way why players don't want to come to New York City to fucking play basketball. Or to play any sport for that fucking matter. Okay? Because the fan base is rabid as fuck for whatever reason. Because the New York Knicks fan base has never seen a fucking championship. How many people are still rooting for the Knicks today who actually remember even seeing a fucking championship situation here in New York City? It's ridiculous. It's dumb. I never fucking understood why the fans. I'm a Knicks fan, but I am of the mentality that my team is one of the lower teams in the NBA. One of the lower teams in the NBA. Has been for a long time. That's why I always considered it that. Even when they were making bullshit playoff berths. 8th seed, 7th seed, just to be first round knockouts. That doesn't mean a fucking thing at all. It's a garbage. It means nothing. Absolutely nothing. I've always had that mentality about this team because that's the way that the team always behaved. It behaved like a team that was at the bottom. Trying to save cap space. Trying to tank games so they can get better draft picks. All kinds of, this is all the stuff that lower tier teams do. So I always behaved like that. Unfortunately, my brethren, my fellow Knicks fans, don't do that. They're of the belief that this is still a top organization in the NBA, and it's not, and hasn't been in over two decades. And that's being kind, because I even think the 2000 team, I think that team made the finals, and even that team I wasn't really that fucking overly impressed with. The 90s, that was when everything was great. And they had some great teams in the 80s and the 70s, of course, is when they won their championships. Had a good run for a while there, but it hasn't been a decent franchise in forever. And yet the fan base acts like they're entitled to some shit, like there's some prestige here, like they have lineage. You don't have anything. I would know. I've been here with you the entire time. I've literally been here for the whole ride with you. I was here for the Stoudemires. I was here for the Starberries. I was here for, oh my God, Allen Houston's knees. I was here for the Porzingis, for the Linsanity. I was here for all that shit. I'm telling you guys, this organization is not what you think it is. And that's still not the point of why I'm bringing this up. Because it's not just the fan base. The media pretends like it's something big because it's in New York. Management acts like it's something big because it's in New York. Oh, I own Madison Square Garden. I own the Knicks. I own prime real estate here. Have you ever been by Madison Square Garden? Unless you're from here, you don't know the real Madison Square Garden. You don't know. It's one of the smelliest, stinkiest places in the fucking city. I guess because it's literally a landmark here and everyone treats it like it's such historical. It smells. It stinks. You ever been to Penn Station underneath? Jesus Christ. You ever tried using a public toilet around here? You'd want to fucking kill yourself. Or at least the person next to you. It's a horrible place. You ever been inside the building? It's rinky-dink. There's nothing. I've been to some cities. Listen, I've had the chance, thankfully, because of pro wrestling and because of my financial situation over the past 10 years or so, I've had a chance to be in some beautiful fucking places. Beautiful fucking places. And not overseas. Not all of them are overseas. Here in the States. Here in the Northeast. Alone, I've been able to visit some wonderful-looking places. This city is a dump. And Madison Square Garden is the heart of the dumpage. It's like right there. It's second only to Port Authority. Port Authority is the nastiest fucking place on earth. If you've never been to New York fucking city, and the first thing you do is take a bus in, and the first place you see is fucking Port Authority, I apologize to you. Because that is not a representation of all of us. That place is a dump. The airports are dumps. The landmarks are dumps. And that's the larger point here. I got a little bit of heat just earlier today. I'm recording this Tuesday night. Just earlier today, caught major heat. Because people started getting this idea like I'm bashing the city. Oh, you're bashing the city. You're becoming a New York hater. Let me explain something to you. Okay? I was born here. I was raised here. Okay? I grew up here. I have almost all of my family here. I met my wife here. I made a son here. I raise a family here. I pay taxes here. I work here. So I can say whatever the fuck I want about this city. And what I say about this city is a frustrating, expensive, smelly piece of shit to fucking live in. Now, having said that, will I ever move? I don't know. Probably not. Because it's a smelly, stinking pile of shit, but it's my stinking pile of shit. You understand what I'm saying? If you're fond of your hometown, I think, regardless of how shitty it is, I think you can understand that statement. But I can say whatever the fuck I want. I've earned the right. 36 years on this earth, I've spent an awful lot of it here. And I think I've earned the right to be honest about where the fuck I live. And I think it's time some of you who listen to the show who are from New York also start to realize where it is you live. I think it's time to be honest with yourselves. None of these players want to play here. For what? To be criticized by a fan base that doesn't know its head from its ass? To be criticized by a media who will criticize you, who would be over the moon when that jump shot is hot, and then just kill you and crush you when it's not, just on a whim, flip of a dime. Lineage means nothing. Carmelo took this team to the playoffs, strong favorites, by the way. What, 2-3 straight years carrying a team of nobodies on his back? And yet every missed bucket, every missed opportunity, he's a bum. I listen to ESPN radio all the time. It's one of the inspirations for me even starting this podcast. And I tell you, he's a bum. He's a bum. This guy's garbage. He needs to leave. He doesn't need to be here anymore. I don't understand the big fuss about about Carmelo Anthony. They wanted him out. People forget that. He ran screaming from this fucking place. It wasn't like he left for greener pastures or because, you know, he found a better plan or whatever the case may be. He was shipped out. Because that's what they do to their heroes here. They ship you out. They put you out to pasture. Nobody wants to play here. They want to play in the city for cachet, but they don't want to come to the fucking Knicks, and they don't want to go to Manhattan, and they don't want to deal with ESPN radio. These motherfuckers went to Brooklyn, which, by the way, I live mere minutes from that facility. I'm a little farther now in the new house of oil. The old one, I was like a 15-minute bus ride away. That place is more of a dump than Madison Square Garden. That bullshit little rustic look they gave it, it's a garbage facility. Garbage. It's nice. I actually think it's nicer on the inside than Madison Square Garden, but that is a low fucking bar. A low fucking bar. So, no, I'm not really that enthralled with that at all. And I don't blame these guys for doing it. I don't blame these guys for not coming. And then people will turn it around. Well, the Knicks aren't going to pay a max contract for a player who's not going to play next year. Why? That doesn't make any sense to me. You wouldn't be signing him for 1 year. He signed a 4-year deal with the Brooklyn Nets. You mean to tell me that you don't want to pay a max contract for a 4-year deal for a player who's only going to play 3, even if he's one of the best players in the fucking world? Who the fuck do you have on this team that's worth literally fucking anything in comparison to Kevin fucking Durant? And, of course, Kyrie went to Brooklyn because KD was there. That's duh. So if you get KD, you have a Kyrie option. It's there. If you can convince Kevin Durant to go to New York, or to go to the Knicks, you don't think Kyrie Irving's coming with him? It's just ass backwards. It's a unhealthy mentality that I'm trying to get people around me to break. This whole ideal that New York is great. It's the mecca of basketball. That's horseshit. To be honest with you, if I would have to sit down and think about where the true mecca of basketball is. But it ain't here. Long gone are the days where street parks were filled with young talent brimming, trying to become professionals to get out of the hood. Those days are over. Long past are the days where the New York Knicks were at the top of the food chain and fighting off great teams like the Bulls from the 90s, or the Pistons, or the Pacers. Those days are long fucking gone. Who's a rival of the Knicks now? I think it's the Knicks. They always seem to get in their own fucking way. So yeah, I just wanted to bring that up real quick because that was annoying. That was annoying. That was on my fucking mind hardcore. I can't even begin to describe to you how frustrating that was for me. Anyway, I'm glad we got that out in the open here midway through the show here because now it's time for the fun shit. Now it is time for the fun shit. So what happened is this. So like I told you, I left my notes, so I didn't get a chance to do the show that I wanted to do, but that doesn't mean I still can't have fun doing my own fucking show. So, what I decided to do was I went back into the archives here, started looking back at some of the older episodes of Orsini's Uncensored Mind, and I realized that there's a particular thing that I did earlier in the episodes that I haven't done in a very long time, and I think because it was fucking subjective, right? I did a top 10 list. Okay, I've done top 10 since, but this is a different type of list. I did a top 10 list of my favorite television shows of all time. And I wanted to make it clear at the time, and I listened back to it, where I was making sure people understood it was my favorite. Not 10 shows that I think are the best shows of all time. 10 shows that are my favorite. And we're going to do the same thing here. I'm bringing it back, if only for a short time. But I'm going to do my 10 favorite movie franchises of all time. Now, allow me to explain how this is going to go. First of all, you're probably saying to yourself, Orsini, please make it specific. Is this what you think the top 10 movie franchises of all time are? Or is it your favorite, your personal choice of movie franchises? Okay. My own personal choice. This is for me. This is my list. Everybody's got a list. I would love to hear what your list is. Feel free to comment. Feel free to send me messages. Of course, you can email me at agorsini96host@gmail.com. There's many ways to contact me. I would love to hear your list. Again, this is called the Top 10 Movie Franchises of All Time. And I would also like to clarify that. So, movie franchises. What is the criteria? What the hell am I talking about? Movie franchises to me is basically any movie that's had more than one film. Meaning I did this with a minimum of at least two films. To me, you're not a franchise on your own if it's just the one film. Like, The Goonies is not a fucking franchise. It's a well-respected fucking film. It is a cult classic, but it ain't a franchise. And that's what we're doing, sir. So at least two films and up, because some of these that I picked have even way more than that. So that was one of the criteria there. Another thing that I wanted to keep in mind with people, I did not even include anything from the MCU. I did not include any of that. And the reason for that is because my MCU episodes, what was that, episode 86, where it was broken up into three parts. That is more than enough MCU to last me a fucking lifetime. I wanted this to be different, and I wanted this to be fun, to really think about, and really put pen to paper. And I didn't want to include it in the MCU, because to be honest with you, even if I did, I mean, you're talking maybe 4 or 5 of the top 10 would probably be from the MCU, just to be fair. So I just eliminated all that, and I challenged myself for here to really think about, because it's hard picking a list for yourself. This is why people have such a hard time picking lists in general. You know, they don't want to be the one to be to discard or to leave anything out or think back of, you know, because I remember listening back to my top 10 favorite shows category audio, I should say. And I was just like, man, I wish I could have redo that. I don't think it's a bad list. I think it's solid. Actually, I think it still stands. But there were a few things where I thought I could have discussed it more or whatever the case may be. So, all right. So if I run into any more hiccups throughout this, I will explain further. But we're going to go ahead and get right into it because I'm running short on time now all of a sudden. I got like 20 minutes to get this in. So don't worry about that. We should just be fine. Now, also like I did for the top 10, we're going to be playing some sounds. Okay? I want to really make this a fucking experience. So, I will give you the music, I will give you the movie, and then I will give you the reason why it's on this list and why it's there. Because, again, this is personal favorites. So, a lot of these movies, if not all of them, have sentimental value to me, and I will go into a description as to each one. Now, I would like to also say before I do this, the franchises, I'm basing this list based on overall the franchises. Because if I did my top 10 favorite movies, I would probably pick movies that aren't in these franchises. You understand what I'm saying to you? So I'm picking movie franchises. My personal favorite top 10. So let's get started right here, right at the bottom. Number 10. Number 10 holds a very unique spot in my heart for obvious reasons. Now, that sounds odd, right? That's Flo Rida. Everyone knows that. But the 10th movie franchise that I fell in love with, I've watched it 1,000 times. It always makes me laugh. It never fails to entertain me. The Hangover franchise is one of my favorite franchises of all time. All time. And I don't know who people are going to hear that. They're going to go, really, dude? Fucking all time? Yes, all fucking time. I have a lot of comedy. To me, is like my favorite genre of all time. That's most of the shit that I watch. Stand-up comedy, comedic films, romantic comedies, whatever the case may be, I'll watch it as long as it makes me laugh in some capacity. And this, all three of these fucking movies, did not fail to make me crack up at some fucking point. Now the writing gets shoddy and it's full of holes, but the decrepit comedy is what it's all about, baby. I loved the Wolfpack stuff. I love everything about these characters. Zach Galifianakis is my hero to this day for this fucking franchise. A lot of great things came out of this franchise. Mike Tyson and a tiger. Just everything that I love about, like, just randomness and shit like that. Where I fucking love it. I love everything about this fucking franchise. It's fucking great. The Doug's missing. There's a black Doug and a white Doug and the stripper. And then going back to Las Vegas, it's just fucking hilarious. There were a lot of criticisms for the second film and then a whole lot for the third film. But again, as we continue further, you'll start to realize I don't really give too much shit about any of those critics. I either like a movie or I didn't like a movie. My enjoyment of a film has shit to do with how somebody else felt about it. So let's move on here to number 9. And this might be another shock for people. I don't know how many people would actually put this in the top 10. Just franchises. I don't know. But to me, it has a lot of sentimental value. Number 9 here comes up. Yeah. Little Axel F. If you're listening to this in the car right now, I know you're waiting for that beat drop, so I'm not going to talk over it. Yeah. The song alone, I mean, come on, guys. I don't even want to play it that long, but you can't. You got to give it a minute. If you haven't figured it out by now, I'm talking about Beverly Hills Cop starring Eddie Murphy and my main man Judge Reinhold, baby. This was the old buddy cop film. This was hilarious. At the time, actually, can we turn this off now before I get sued? At the time that this movie came out, He was hot fire. He was all over the place. I loved him. Eddie Murphy is one of my favorite comedians, literally, of all time. That's another list that I would love to sit down and do, comedians and comedy, because that one would be super fucking hard for me to do. Like, this was difficult. But to do a list on comedians would be almost fucking impossible. I would need a lot of medication to get through that shit. And then even then, I might second, like, even if I was talking about it live, I might have to second guess myself. It would be difficult. But Eddie Murphy definitely is in the conversation, top 10 all-time comedians for me. And this film really solidified. Like, his stand-up was great, but this film was just fucking... I got a little bit of everything. Action hero, drama, comedy, all the banana in the tailpipe, all kinds of shit. The fucking convincing the construction workers they're in the wrong place in the union. Just everything. Sharp promos. Just the way that he speaks, the charisma. Even down to the last film, which some people were kind of shitty on. But come on, Uncle Dave, man. Wonder World. Come on, man. This whole fucking thing. This whole fucking franchise was dope. Top to bottom. I'm a huge fucking Beverly Hills Cop mark. If you're not a fucking Beverly Hills Cop mark, I don't know what to fucking tell you. You got, there's something broken inside of you. You need fixing. All right. This music's going to sound a little sad. It's going to sound a little sad, but follow with me here, okay? See if you know this one. I think that's what I like about this franchise so much. It's so sad. This, of course, the soundtrack of the Lethal Weapon franchise. Again, a movie franchise that got a lot of criticism as we got later on into the franchise. But there is no mistaking, this is one of the greatest franchises of all time, in my opinion. I have so many memories attached to all of the Lethal Weapons. I had a grandfather who was huge. As a matter of fact, it's the same grandfather who was like really into wrestling. He was huge into the Lethal Weapon franchise. Loved it. I loved it. It was such a... Even for a child, like, I was basically a kid when this fucking movie came out, and still drawn to it just based on fucking Riggs. Mel Gibson's portrayal of Martin Riggs to this day, my God in heaven. What a fucking role. I mean, wanting to eat the gun and not being in the right place and the right frame of mind and always getting himself into fucking trouble. And he's a lethal weapon, convincing the guy to jump on the big bag and all this. The fucking Lethal Weapon 1, when he's running down the street fucking barefoot with the fucking AK trying to chase a fucking car on foot. This guy's amazing. Oh, man, all the way down, it got a little crazy with Chris Rock and all kinds of Jet Li. I did the cold open here with my favorite part from that film. It got a little crazy toward the end there, but that's all right, man. It's all part of the family. Rene Russo coming in, being a contributive part of the cast, and, of course, Joe Pesci. Okay, all right. Joe Pesci coming in, showing some comedic timing as opposed to, you know, asking anybody how funny he is. You know, what am I funny? Am I funny to you? What am I, a fucking clown? Yeah, Joe, you're funny. You're very funny. You're very funny in this franchise, baby. Lethal Weapon, man. Okay, they always raise the stakes here at Lethal Weapon. This is old school throwback action films, man. I'm telling you, this is back when it was good. I know I sound like an old man, but goddamn, today's action films with the Fast and the Furious is, goddamn it. At least they tried to write some shit in these franchises. I'll get more on that in a little bit. There's another one coming up that's, yeah. So, let me see. I don't think I've been numbering anything here. Just to keep track of what we're doing here. 10 was the Hangover franchise. 9, Beverly Hills Cop. 8, Lethal Weapon. So, let's get into, that was 8? Yeah, number 7. Let's get into number 7. Let's cue that up, bitch. I went from, like, the saddest franchise ever to an even sadder franchise. You've got a friend. Go ahead and sing it, Randy Newman. You've got a friend in me. This franchise has the reputation of also being super duper fucking sad. I just love the writing. I just love the writing of this film. I love Tom Hanks. If I had to do a list for actors, I think Tom might be either one or two or maybe three. He'd be top three. It would be hard to determine where he lands, but he's one of my favorite actors of all time. Even his voice work. Being Woody is like a big part of my childhood, and now, officially, I know this is topical because Four just came out, and now, officially, is a part of my son's life because Four is the first Toy Story he's seen. I've tried having him sit through the other ones before, and I guess maybe he was too young. But he's four now, and we took him with a buddy, one of his friends, little play date, to go see Toy Story 4, and he loved it. He walked away. There's something about Forky. I know a lot of people were shitting on it. Oh, this movie didn't need to be made. 3 was perfect. It ended it on the right note. All right, well, then close your eyes. You know, they could do whatever they want. All the original cast came back, which means that they wanted to do it. All right, so it was a good film. 4 was good. 3, I think, is the set. The saddest one ever. I felt like 3 was the ending to Andy's story and 4 was the ending to Woody's story. No spoilers, but it's a really sad fucking film. Everything about Toy Story is fucking sad. Even the beginning of 4 was fucking sad. The beginning of 4 was sad. The ending of 4 was sad. The ending of 3 was sad. A lot of these fucking Toy Story movies, they just break your fucking heart. So I love it. It's fucking good. It's very, very good. Now, this one probably won't shock anybody if they know me well enough. All right? If they know me well enough, number 6 is not going to shock anybody. But especially my mom. If my mom's listening to this, Jesus Christ, she knows. No. Played that one already, you dick. Yeah. Some of you are saying, yeah, this had to be on the list. You damn straight it had to be on the goddamn list. Hey, Ray Parker. I want to hear Ray Parker. Yeah, that part's good. I like that part. But I want to hear Ray Parker. That's not Ray Parker. There's Ray Parker. In your neighborhood. Go ahead. He's got a silky voice. Who are the females singing in the background? They got no credit. They probably at home right now, pissed off as fuck. No royalties. Hit it. Have you noticed that a lot of these franchises had like a very iconic theme? I think Lethal Weapon, the one that I just played a second ago, was kind of an off whatever, and the Hangover one, not so much. But for the most part, these franchises really had iconic songs and iconic music. This one also has very personal ties to me. My mom, poor soul, was destroyed at home many a night. With me playing this fucking movie over and over and over. And damn it to hell when they came out with a 2. Oh, my Lord have mercy. When they came out with 2. And 2, another one. If we can go through this, maybe we'll have a discussion about this another time. But 2 was heavily criticized. Heavily criticized. Even from fucking cast members. They were like, I don't know. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. That's what I was saying. Now, you're probably wondering, AJ, are you including all of the Ghostbuster films and not just the classic 1 and 2? Are you incorporating the all-women one and the upcoming 3rd that will make this and finally close out as a trilogy? And the answer to that question is yes, I am including it. Now, for the record, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the all-female Ghostbusters was that great. I didn't think it was that great. But I did not, for one second, think that it was nearly as bad as people were trying to make it out to be. There were a lot of people who were shitting on that film long before it ever came out. So I'm not one of those people. I didn't think it was that bad. It had its funny moments. I chuckled a bit. But it's definitely, of the three, is clearly the weakest. And I can already tell you right now, I haven't even seen the official 3rd one yet, obviously. But I can already tell you it won't be as good as that one either. When that third one comes out, it will immediately be better than the all-female Ghostbuster. But I am happy also about the fact that Ghostbusters 2 gave me one of my favorite and most underappreciated rap songs, literally of all time. Not enough people know about this track. Dougie Fresh and the Great Fresh and the Get Fresh Crew. Spirit? Are you fucking kidding me? It was, oh, hell yes. This beat, though. Like, this is one of my favorite rap songs of all time, and no one ever talks about it.
Dig it. Dig it. Dig it. Dig it.
Come on.
Check it out.
This shit is crazy 90s. This shit is hype. Why doesn't anyone talk about this song? Teach me how to tell you. Teach me
spirit. Some people hear it. Some people fear it. Spirit. Some people just won't go near it. Show us on me and you should know that you. The spirit is the key to a lot. Spirit. Some people hear it. Some people fear it. Spirit. Some people just won't go near it.
Hot, son. I know everyone talks about Bobby Brown on this fucking soundtrack, but fuck that. Dougie Fresh killed it. That was fucking dope. When this shit is over, I'm going to play that whole track. I'm going to jerk off to it. I'm joking. I have so much other things to catch up on jerking off with. That's not going to happen. But let me see. That was number six. Number five. Now, I grabbed this because it doesn't have an official theme. But this comes from my favorite part of the franchise. Or one of the favorites. We're going to have to skip ahead. Here we go. Saints go marching in. AJ, what the fuck are you playing right now? I am playing one of the main title themes to Die Hard with a Vengeance. That's right. Number five, cracking the top five here, the Die Hard franchise. I can watch these fucking movies all goddamn day. You want to talk about a man's man. Every time I watch another Die Hard film, I actually get manlier. I don't know if you guys knew that about me. I actually gain manhood when I watch Die Hard. It's a funny fucking thing. But Bruce Willis is such a man. He's so manly. And such a rugged, tough, badass motherfucker. That I feel like if I was on the wing of a fucking jet as it was pulling full G's, I would not only confidently be able to stand on it, but I would be willing and able to engage in full hand-to-hand combat on top of that wing. I feel that if I was at the top of a skyscraper, knowing full well that a series of C4 explosives were about to blow up the roof of said building, that I would be confident enough to wrap myself in fire hose and jump several flights shoeless through a glass window. Every time I watch this movie, or these movies, I feel confident that if I go into a subway train and it happens to get blown out the back and it starts cartwheeling through a platform, that I am fully capable of surviving that and walking out and carrying on with the film for at least another hour. This is one of the greatest movie franchises of all time because somebody sat down. This was pre-Fast and Furious. Somebody sat down and said, let's take a title character and put him through as much bullshit as we possibly can. Is there any possible way to make sure that he just gets dogged out as much as humanly fucking possible? Is it possible? Can we do that? Can you think of a person who should have died? What was the name of that? I gotta look it up. There was was it Screen Junkies? Where there were like actual death counts, like injuries that were sustained in films that should have killed you. And it was like they did Die Hard and it was like 400 fucking times he should have died. But he didn't because he's Bruce fucking Willis. I remember because I know you guys are going to ask me again, AJ, obviously Die Hard 1, Die Hard 2, and Die Hard with a Vengeance are awesome. But clearly you're not including Live Free or Die Hard or that other Die Hard where they went to Russia. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of that one, but the one in Russia, you're clearly not including. I'm including every single fucking one of them because the other two ones got just as fucking crazy, if not more, The scene with the truck and the fucking fighter plane, and what was that? Live Free or Die Hard? My God in heaven! Sliding down concrete several floors to the ground, ducking and rolling, utilizing a car to take out a Apache helicopter. My God in heaven! Are you shitting me? Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker! Just as big as everything else in that film. Number four is actually kind of a cheesy pick. Kind of a cheesy pick, but it's definitely high on my list. Absolutely. Yes. Speaking of outlandish shit to survive, Indiana Jones should have died a death many a day. The fact that he didn't die via snakes is sad. But yes, Indiana Jones, and yes, I am including the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I am including all of them. I did not have a problem with that last one. Yes, I know he survived a nuclear explosion, and that is odd. But we're going to look past all that and get to the nostalgia of the whole bit. I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan. I have been for a long time. And my son is, because one of the first games he learned how to play on Xbox was the Indiana Jones Lego game. So he knows all the characters. I don't even think he's sat through a full movie yet, but he knows a lot about Indiana Jones as well. One of the things about the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull that pissed so many people off, but, you know, in essence did not really piss me off, is because I happen to be a really big Indiana Jones fan, which means I had, and it's going to sound funny now, I had the DVD collector's box, which it had, this was before Crystal Skull came out. So I have the DVD box where it has Raiders, it has Temple, it has the Last Crusade, and then it has a bonus DVD where it's like, behind the scenes, it's a documentary on the filming of the films and Steven Spielberg talking a bunch of shit about everything that happened and what went down, yada yada yada, right? So I have access to all this footage, and in the bonus disc, I remember I watched it like 1,000 times. I watched all those things. I used to work security when I bought it, so I was really going hard on all the discs. And I remember seeing on the bonus disc the storyboard of how the original Indiana Jones was supposed to be an archaeologist who was trying to uncover blah, blah, blah. And he runs into or in comes into contact with aliens. And I remember that being the way that he described it and the way he storyboarded it. And he said, well, the title character of Indiana Jones was read by a bunch of people, and Tom Selleck was supposed to had auditioned for the role, and that audition tape was on the disc as well. And they liked him, but he was doing Magnum PI, and he just didn't have the schedule to do Indiana Jones. So Steven's second pick, the guy who he didn't even read for, but it was just somebody that he wanted to work with again, because they had worked together on Star Wars, was Harrison Ford, who, as we all know, became Indiana Jones, but he stated on the DVD, or he being Harrison Ford, that originally when he was offered Indiana Jones and he read the script and he did the storyboards and all that stuff, he initially turned the role down because he had just done Star Wars and he didn't want to be the guy who just did everything in fucking space. It was just weird. Everything I get offered is in fucking space. I don't want to do space. So what they ended up doing is, because he really wanted to work with Harrison, is they ended up changing some things around, and it ended up being more of a religious film than an alien film. So he signed on and everything worked out, fell, the rest is history. But the original plan, and after they did the first one, there was no way they were going to go to aliens with Temple, and they weren't going to do Aliens at Last Crusade, but being as far away and removed as they were when they did the fourth film, to do the alien thing wasn't really that much of a surprise to me, which is probably why I went into that film with a little bit more of a happier tone. I wasn't really as negative about the film because I had already known all that backstory. But for those who just enjoy the films for what they are and they don't really know the backstory and they don't know all that inside stuff, this was an odd left turn, and it shocked a lot of people and it fucked with them. So having said, it's still one of my favorite franchises. I dare say, if not for Crystal Skull, it might have been higher. I'm not sure because I was torn between this and the next one, which is number three. Three really fucked with me, but it ended up being The Nod. That's right, folks. I was waiting for it to hit, but I'm getting impatient. I, of course, am talking about Back to the Future. Back to the Future is one of the greatest franchises of all time. And to be honest with you, in choosing between this and Indiana Jones, the reason why I gave this the nod and gave it the third spot over Indy is the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. They masterpieced it. It was three great movies, and then they gave us one that was kind of not so much. It wasn't terrible, like I just described, but it wasn't exactly what people were waiting for and looking for. Back to the Future never made that mistake. It stayed with three, no matter how many times. Back to the Future is one of those franchises with, like a lot of mysticism around it. I don't know how to explain it. Like, every year since the third film, it's like, okay, they're going to make a fourth. It was hugely successful. You know, Back to the Future also, if I'm not mistaken, is one of the first franchises where the first movie was so successful that they filmed two and three together. And they were able to chop it up and release it at different times, yada, 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 which is a formula that has been copied 1,000 times, even more recently when they did Infinity War and Endgame together. Managed to squeeze a Marvel reference in. So the Back to the Future thing not only is a great franchise just written-wise and for obvious reasons, it still has one of the biggest fan bases of any 80s film ever in the world. And it's still, even to this day, just rumor upon rumor. I love the celebration they did. The closest they ever did to adding on to the franchise was the Jimmy Kimmel episode where they arrived on set at the exact date that the time machine was set for. All the way, what was that, 2018 or 2015, I believe, October 2015. And because that was when they had predicted the Cubs, and they were like a year behind, because the Cubs did it in 2016. Just everything about that franchise, the kissing of the mom, and the butthead, everything about that fucking movie, even three, as confusing as three was, because three went back to the original film, but then it went to the future. It was all over the fucking place. And then, I'm confusing that with two. Three was the Wild West one, which was even more fucking confusing. But I always wanted the fucking hoverboard. I ended up getting a skateboard, a Back to the Future skateboard. It was designed like the hoverboard, but clearly had wheels. I was unimpressed with that particular Christmas. But actually, that Christmas was pretty badass. I got the Back to the Future skateboard, and I got an Atari for that Christmas. So, you know, and this is coming from someone who comes from a family that doesn't really do Christmas. I guess I was like, you know, I was their first kid. They didn't know how to fucking act. So they just did a bunch. They just got me a bunch of shit. All right, so that's number three. For obvious reasons, folks, I don't think I need to go into any more specifics about the film itself. It's one of the most famous franchises of all time. But that's my third favorite of all time. So what is number two? Number two and number one, like I said, for four and three, Indiana Jones, Back to the Future, you can go back and forth for me. Kind of even, I have my reasonings for going with three. One and two, equally difficult to decide, but I will tell you why I decided one over the other. But let's get to number two first. I got a chance to hear this live from an orchestra. This shit is ridiculous. He's a pirate. In my opinion, IMO, one of the greatest movie franchises ever of all time. It just so happens that Disney strikes again on this end. Disney does indeed strike again. They hit it on the money here with this one. Brilliantly written, I think. and not just one. I know people have their criticisms of Dead Man's Chest. Dead Man's Chest got the Ultron treatment before Ultron was a thing, where they filmed 2 and 3 together. So you just got this feeling like 2 wasn't really going anywhere because they were just kind of building toward this big crescendo at the end for At World's End. And you're probably wondering, oh, AJ, you're clearly talking about The Curse of the Black Pearl, Dead Man's Chest, and At World's End. You're not including Stranger Tides and Dead Man Tell No Tales. And the answer to that is, yes, I am including. I'm fair. That's why. I'm fair. Yes, Penelope Cruz and Blackbeard were weird. Okay, yes. No. I'm not going to take that away from you. But it's Ian McShane. I love Ian McShane. And almost anything that he fucking does. Stranger Tides was weird. I'll give you that. It didn't fall into it. The reason why I think I didn't like Stranger Tides as much as I liked the other ones, including Dead Man's Tale. I loved Dead Man's Tale better than I like Stranger Tides. What made the movies for me, yes, Johnny Depp was great. Jack Sparrow was an iconic character. Will and Elizabeth made those movies for me. So when I didn't get that in the fourth film, yeah, it fell flat. They tried to cover it with Johnny and Penelope, and that's just, that's not the same. Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley not together. Like all this controversy right now about Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. Oh, man. Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom not being together is fucking depressing because that's one of the greatest chemistry couples on TV and movies, I should say, I have ever fucking seen, like ever. And I just love it. And yes, I will admit it here on the show at the end of Dead Man Tell No Tales when the couple was reunited and Will was able to leave his cursed position and return to the world of the living to have Elizabeth in the final seconds of the film to come out and hug and close that story. Ah, emotions. I got emotional. Like Notebook said, I got in my feelings. I had goosebumps when that music hit. One day, the track, one day for the Pirates soundtrack, one of the greatest composed pieces of all time, and one of my favorite compositions ever. And that's number two. So what is number one and how did it beat it out? Well, to me, number one's a no-brainer. I didn't even have to think about this. I knew it was one or two. I just had to think about the rest of the list, Pirates being number two. How did this break it out? How did this beat it out? Well, what is number one? You know what this is. And that's why it's number one. As soon as you hear it. Hell yeah. So 70s. You could do a sideways fuck to this. You could. Like, put a doggy, right? And just leave it to the side and just slouch. And flex. Like American Psycho would be doing. Like, fucking really beef up and just get your fucking biceps down. And slouch. The Rocky franchise to me is the greatest franchise ever in the history of cinema. There is, do not at me, there is no other franchise in the world better, in my opinion, than the Rocky franchise. Characters well developed, beautifully written, as much shit as Four gets for being just a commercial bonanza. Clearly one of the best montage films of all time. It's a Hall of Famer. The ultimate underdog story. This is the rag-to-riches story that every film after has tried to mimic and capture that essence of, but it is almost damn near impossible to fucking do. It's an impossible feat. There isn't really much that you can do as far as mimicking this film and trying to capture that magic. It can't be done. Sylvester Stallone has efforted on many occasions to be a great actor outside of this franchise, and I, as much as I enjoy his work, he will always be Rocky Balboa. And now, the big question, how did he become number one over Pirates if I have such an emotional tie to Pirates and they almost literally have the same amount of parts and sequels to each other? How the hell did Rocky win out? Well, Rocky kind of cheated. It's the one reason to beat everybody else. Creed. Creed is awesome. I love Creed. I love the fact that it continued the story, and I love the fact that it continued the story well. That's huge for me. I love that fact. It's a huge contributor because I'm able, even now, like my mom tells me to this day of the time that when I was in a stroller, she would push me into the movie theaters to go watch Rocky, and now here I am, 36 years old on my couch, watching Creed with my kid. That's a long legacy and a long time, and I'm super happy that I've lived in an era where I can get this kind of entertainment. That's how much I think about the Rocky franchise. It's one of the greatest franchises of all time. This is how much I love this franchise. Because you know it runs on TNT and TBS all the fucking time. And not one. You can't just catch one Rocky. They always do all the Rockies in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Rocky Balboa, Creed, Creed 2. One day I just want to like just fucking binge it all. And I'll probably just cry at the end of it. I'm super happy they haven't killed Rocky off yet. Even though he says that Creed 2 was the last one, he's not doing anymore. Yeah, we'll see about that. Look, Mickey died in Rocky 3, so there's a Creed 3. Yeah, it's going to get hella sad over there. So that's my top 10. My top 10 favorite movie franchises of all time. If you've got a list that you want to share, it clearly won't be a better list than mine. But if it's a list that you feel passionate about, let me know. Hit me up in the comments, message, email, the whole shebang. This was a lot of fun. I loved playing the music and all kinds of shit. I will have information this week on episode 100. I promise you. I promise you that that's going to be a thing. I promise you that it's we're going to do it. We're going to do it live. I don't know if it's going to be live. I'm not entirely sure yet. I don't want to give anything away until I know no. You know what I'm saying? Until I know, until I am aware of what's actually fucking happening, I don't really want to get too deep into it. So, having said all that, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for downloading. Thank you so much for sharing. And, of course, thank all of you, every single one of you. I'm inching closer and closer and closer to 100. And the closer that I get, just the more anxious I'm getting about getting that episode over with and done and in the can. And so I want to thank you guys once again from the bottom of my effing heart. Thank you for enjoying. And this is, I have once again bequeathed, I have bequeathed unto all of you episode 96.
Welcome to our daddy show. This is Ocean Senses Mine. If you listen to my daddy show, he should buy me toys. He's a good daddy.